Okay, good morning, everybody.
Boker tov. Welcome and thank you for coming. I hope that the shir is a little respite from the cleaning, the cooking, and an opportunity to prepare a little bit of other ruchnius, important preparations for Pesach as well. Right, exactly. Be a chometz getting eating. So first of all, if I could remind people, please to turn off their phones. That's important because we always have a little interlude. That's the minhag of the shir. And please to remember your masks as well. There's two sponsorships for today. The shirim for all of 2022 are sponsored very kindly, anonymously, as an aliyah for the neshamas of Brocha Bats Bendit and Zelig Ben Kalman. We're very grateful for the sponsorship for the year. But today's shir is also specifically, the live shir is sponsored by Mrs. Rachel Steiner. I don't know if Mrs. Steiner is with us on Zoom. I'm not able to see the screen. This time last year, Mrs. Steiner was with us on Zoom. I'm sure she is as well today. And the shir is sponsored Le'ilu Nishmas, her husband, Professor Mark Steiner, Mordechai Yehuda Ben Ephraim, whose husband is today. I just wanted to say whose yahrzeit is today, the Yud Bet Nisan. And I just wanted to mention that Professor Steiner was a follower of the shir. Professor Steiner, Mrs. Steiner used to be sitting over here. And I still have in my inbox a number of emails from Professor Steiner, which I suspect psychologically I'm not dealing with because I don't want to delete them. I want them to stay there. Professor Steiner was not only a Talmud Chochem of great note, but also a professor of philosophy of physics and maths in Hebrew University. His background was in philosophy in Princeton, and he used to send me emails quite often. As I say, I had quite a few. He had an intolerance for fluffy thinking and for pseudo thinking. I've got a whole email here about Minhagim, where he says people shouldn't just be picking and choosing, they should be looking at the sources, etc. And as I say, there are a few things that I still need to work through that he sent to me. I was certainly very honored that Professor Steiner used to come to the shirim. I don't know whether he would have enjoyed today's shirim, or he would accuse me of being a little bit pseudo-academic. He wouldn't have said it to my face, but maybe he would have thought it. But I don't know. I hope not. But certainly, the shir should be an aliyah for his neshama. He is very much missed by me and by the shir, and of course by his loving family. And please God, we should learn in his memory and learn good Torah as well. Okay, let us learn about the Haggadah. One of the challenges of giving shirim on Pesach, or about Pesach, is that people are fairly saturated with Pesach shiurim over the years, decades. I'm sure that between us here, we've listened to many hundreds of years of Pesach shiurim, and therefore, what new is there to say? And on a certain level, maybe you don't need to say anything new. Maybe the joy of the Seder is to go over things, the recipes that we love, and moments that we love that take us back as well. But I think there is something new to be learned every year, and I hope that we will bring that out today. One of the things that revolutionized my perspective of the Seder many years ago was Rav Rimon's Haggadah. Rav Yossi Rimon, who I did not know then personally, I was living in Yerushalayim, but now he's the Rav of the Kehillah that we now live in Alon Shvut, so I know him personally, which is a great privilege. But he wrote a commentary on the Haggadah about 10 years ago, in which he has an introduction about the structure of the Haggadah. And that's something that people don't always focus on. Of course, the word that we use for the Seder is Seder, meaning it has an order, it has a structure. One of the things that I personally feel in life very strongly is that understanding structure is a critically important tool in getting a grasp on Torah. Torah can sometimes be so overwhelming, there's so much material, it's so broad, it's so deep. The structure enables us to break it down and to grasp more carefully each individual part, and then we can begin to plug it all together again. For example, Yom Kippur Davening. Yom Kippur Davening goes on forever and ever and ever. I remember as a young man, as a child, whatever, just like thousands of pages, and where, you know, you keep looking and there's still another 900 pages to go. The more that you get a handle on the structure of Yom Kippur, you begin to see how it all clicks together. Ah yes, now there's this, and now there's this. The Seder, the Haggadah, is shorter than Yom Kippur Davening, but it's still, Maggid is a couple of thousand words. And what I want to try and bring you today is not just Rav Rimon's structure, because I'm quite sure that many of you have read his Haggadah, but I do want to spend the last 10 minutes of the shiur, 15 minutes, dealing with his Chiddush in the structure. I think David has it with him here. But I want to bring you some other interesting ideas about the evolution, the origins and structure of the Haggadah. And there'll be a few raised eyebrows, I think, at different moments of the shiur, but it'll help us understand it, hopefully more deeply and appreciate it. Okay, so let's start. There's a lot of material in the sheet. We won't get through all of it, but we will look at much of it. Korban Pesach, bringing the Korban on the afternoon of the 14th of Nisan and eating it on the 15th of Nisan in the evening, is one of the oldest rituals in history. Clearly, we were doing this for over 1,000 years from Matan Torah until the destruction of the Second Temple. But it's not clear what else went with that. Meaning now we have a whole Haggadah. Did we, at the time of the Temple, recite the Haggadah? Or recite some of it? And if not, when did it arise? When did it form? Why did we put it together the way we put it together? Once we obviously lost the Korban Pesach, we had to do something else with Seder night, and we'll see that many of the things that we do now were still done, were even done then, but many of them evolved in different ways afterwards. I brought you a couple of references through Tanakh. The Korban Pesach is central. Korban Pesach is so central to the identity of being a Jew that there is even a havam in it. There's even a suggestion in the Gemara that a ger who converts to Judaism has to bring a Korban Pesach just to show that they are Jewish. The renewal of Judaism is critically linked with the Korban Pesach, and I brought you a reference here, not only in Egypt, in the desert afterwards, but Yoshua brings the Korban Pesach there in Perek Hay of Yoshua. Chizkiyahu has a whole renewal of the Jewish people with the Korban Pesach. Yoshiyahu, when there's a revival of Judaism, brings the Korban Pesach. Ezra brings the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach is very much a symbol of that, and also through the Second Temple period. There are sources that we have during the Second Temple period, obviously post-Tanakh. The Book of Jubilees, I don't know if people know, this is a pseudepigraphal book, which talks about the bringing of the Korban Pesach, amongst other things. Also, I don't know if you knew, but there was a group of Jewish soldiers garrisoned on the island of Elephantine, down in Egypt, who had their own temple. They made their own temple, illegally, anti-halachically, but they had their own temple in the 5th century BCE, and I brought you, we discovered a whole bunch of letters about the way that temple worked and the way they brought the Korban Pesach. Now again, this was not the Mikdash in Yerushalayim. This was a breakaway, renegade Mikdash in Elephantine, but nevertheless, it was a group of Jewish people connecting with Korban Pesach. The Qumran Dead Sea Scrolls also talk about these ideas of Pesach as well. And I brought you to start off with two slightly less usual sources, one from Philo and one from Josephus. Who was Philo? Philo was living in Alexandria at the time of the Second Temple, towards the end of the Second Temple. Now, he was a little bit of a breakaway community. They weren't, strictly speaking, halachic in the way that the Jews of Jerusalem maybe were connected with that. But don't forget, this was a time of a lot of breakaway groups. There were the Samaritans in the north, obviously been for many years, the Sadducees, the Essenes, the Dead Sea Scroll sect. But I want to quote you from Philo, who was quite Hellenized, but he talks about Pesach. Number one, after the new moon comes the fourth feast, which the Hebrews in their native tongue call Pascha. Now, Pascha is what they call it in Greek. Now, he was obviously Jewish as well. In this festival, many myriads of sacrifices from noon till evening are offered by the whole people, old and young alike, raised for that particular day to the dignity of the priesthood. Now, that's an interesting point, that the Jewish people themselves became almost like Kohanim. This was not a spectator sport, Korban Pesach. Everybody was in the Beis HaMikdash shechting their own Korban Pesach, because a non-Kohen can shecht as well in the Beis HaMikdash, and there were thousands and thousands of Korbanos. For at other times, the priests, according to the ordinance of the law, carry out both the public sacrifices and those offered by private individuals, but on this occasion, the whole nation performs the sacred rites and acts as priests with pure hands and complete immunity. On this day, every dwelling house is invested with the outward semblance and dignity of a temple. This is very important. The Korban Pesach is a ceremony that happened at home, not in the temple. People brought their Korban Pesach home. Now, of course, Philo's living in Greece, and for the vast majority of Jews at the time of the temple, they never had a Korban Pesach. People often think, oh, everybody had a Korban Pesach. No, only people in Yerushalayim for Pesach
had a Korban Pesach. But if you were living in Ashkelon, or Tveria, or Italy, or Egypt, or Greece, you didn't have a Korban Pesach. You had Seder night without a Korban Pesach. So he says the home is imbued with this outward semblance and dignity of a temple. Maybe he's also talking about the practice there in Egypt. The sacrifice is then slaughtered, that's obviously in Israel, and dressed for the festal noon which befits the occasion. The guests assembled for the banquet have been cleansed by purifying bathing. Tumah and Tahara, we talked about that a little bit last week. And are there not, as in other festive gatherings, to indulge the belly with wine and food, but to fulfill with prayers and hymns the custom handed down by their fathers. Now that's very interesting. Is that a reference to the Haggadah? With prayers and hymns, special, not just like a regular Greek feast. We will look soon in the Shir at a comparison between the Seder ceremony and the Greek symposium, which is remarkable, both in their similarities and in their very clear differences. But the Philo is making a point here, which is this is not just a regular drinking and eating party. This is something special. Seder night, even without a Korban Pesach, prayers, hymns, and minhagim handed down by our fathers. Again, he's living in the first century CE before the destruction. Josephus. Josephus observed Yerushalayim before and lived also after destruction. As you know, Josephus was a Jewish general who was in charge of defending the north against the Romans. He in the end surrendered, moved over to the Roman side, and became a Roman chronicler who wrote a number of very important works in Greek, the Wars of the Jews, the Antiquities of the Jews. Have a look in number two. Accordingly, says Josephus, on the occasion of the feast called Passover, at which they sacrifice from the 9th to the 11th hour, and a little fraternity, as it were, gathers around each sacrifice, not fewer than 10 people, because feasting alone is not permitted. As we know, the Korban Pesach has to be eaten in a group. While the companies often include as many as 20, the sacrifices were counted and amounted to 255,600. This doesn't sound like he made up that number. It's not a rounded up number, really. Allowing an average of 10 diners for each sacrifice, we obtain a total of 2,700,000, all pure and holy. For as to those who have leprosy, or gonorrhea, or women who have their monthly period, or those who are otherwise impure, it is not lawful for them to partake of the sacrifice, nor indeed for any foreigners who come here to worship. Again, a very interesting insight. He's bringing you 200 or 300 years before the Mishnah, an insight into the laws of Nida, of Zav, of Metzora, of the non-Jew can't eat the Korban Pesach. So you can see the Korban Pesach was a phenomenally large event which happened in Yerushalayim. Millions of people gathered together. Now, of course, I didn't bring you here because this is not the forum. There is an entire Christian literature, early Christian literature, about Seder night as well, and whether Seder night was or was not the night of the Last Supper. And if any of you are into Christian theology, which you may be, you may not be, I'm not getting into the halachic do's and don'ts of that right now. Some of the Gospels say that the Last Supper was Seder night. The Gospel of John says it wasn't Seder night. And there's a lot of early Christian literature about the Korban Pesach and substitution with Christian theology, etc. But they also talk about this early days too. And if you're interested in the academic literature, you can look at that. But clearly, as we said, Korban Pesach was central. It happened in the home to a group of people, etc. But what about the Haggadah? We're focusing on the Haggadah today, and we're getting ourselves ready for Maggid in a few days, Be'ezrat Hashem. Go over to page 2. Let's talk about the mitzvah of Maggid. There is a Torah mitzvah, one of the 613, of telling the story. Rambam, number 3. I could have taken from many sources. I brought you here from the Rambam in the Sefer Mitzvahs in number 3. The Hamitzvah Hakuf Nun Zayin, Mitzvah 157, He Shetzivanu L'Sapa B'Yitzis Mitzrayim, B'Leil Chamisha Asa B'Nissan B'Tchilas Halala Kefi Tzachos Lashon HaMisapa. We have to give over the story on the 15th, according to whatever language, according to whatever nusach, however much we can speak. We'll talk about that soon. It doesn't have to be in Hebrew. It can be. There's a famous psak of the Ri Milondra, the Ri of London, who paskan that you have to say Haggadah in the language you understand. Not in just recite it like you're laning in Hebrew. Of course, the language that the Rimi Londra spoke was French. Nobody of any education in England at the time of the Rimi Londra spoke English. That was a very peasant type of Saxon thing to do. The Rimi Londra, England at that point, for the Jewish perspective, was basically a suburb of northern France. It pains me to say that, but it's true. It's true. Okay, fine. So you have to say whatever language you have. V'kol masha yosef b'mama v'yarich hadvarim v'hagdalat v'hagdalat masha asa lanu Hashem. The more you can say about how great this mitzvah is, v'masha asa imam imanu, what God did for us when He brought us out of Egypt, Vashi Aso imanu Hamitzrim, what the Egyptians did for us, the Avel, the Hamas, the horrible treachery and the violence, the Eichlachach Hashem, Nikmasenu, how God took our vengeance, Mehem. Okay, we'll get back to Hodah soon. The praise of Yisparach Hamashe, God commanded me Chasadav, Yieto Yotetov. The more you can do, the better it is. K'moshe Amru Kalamarech Lesapiv Yisis Mitzrayim Harizem Meshubach. The better you are, the more you can say, the more praiseworthy it is. The Hakos of Shabbat Asivu Azehu, and here's a very important pasuk. The pasuk is the root of this mitzvah is V'higadata Levincha B'Yom Hahu. You must tell your child on that day, Leimor saying, Ba'avur ze'asa Hashem li b'tzei siv Mitzrayim. This is what God did for me when I came out of Egypt. And that's a very important pasuk, because as we'll see through the Shia, this is in the first person. This is not a recollection of history, of what happened to other people. This is what God did to me when I came out of Egypt. Even though the person saying this may be living thousands of years after Egypt, nevertheless, the key message, the key communication of Seder is that this is not history. This is not his story. This is my story. This is one of the Rabbi Sachs's lines. This is my story, our story of our family. This is relevant to our days as well. And we'll see that coming up again and again through. The Ainli Ela Bizman Sheyesh Lo Ben. I only know this pasuk applies when a parent has a child. By the way, men and women are equally obligated in both the telling and the receiving of this story. What if I'm on my own? Or I'm with other guests who are not my children. How do I know there's a mitzvah of the Yisipu Yisis Mitzrayim? Tamad Loima v'yomim Moshe el ha'am Zachor es hayom hazeh. Remember this day, Asher yatzasem in Mitzrayim, when you came out of Egypt. And as you probably know, Zachor in Chumash always doesn't mean remember. It means mention something, say something. Like Zachirat Amalek. We don't just think about Amalek. We read the Megillah. We read the Pasha in the Torah about Amalek. So too, Zachor, you have to recite something to remember the day that you came out of Egypt. And then the Rambam says a peculiar thing. Klima, what does that mean? Shehut Siva leZachro, we have to remember it. Kamoy Shamro, as we say, Zachor is Yom HaShabbos leKalsho. Remember Shabbos. What's he telling me? The Zachor es Hayom Hazeh, remembering Pesach, is we know what to do because of Zachor es Yom HaShabbos. Well, if I know the word Zachor, I know the word Zachor. I don't need Zachor es Yom HaShabbos to tell me the word Zachor. And if I don't know what it means, I won't know what it means in Shabbos either. So I heard from Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, Zechut Zalich Racha, many years ago, he brought up Shabbat, which says, no, that's the whole point. Zachor es Yom HaShabbos Lekatsho doesn't mean remember that there was once a Shabbos many eons ago when God created the world. It's remember today is Shabbos. Today it's the seventh day. And therefore, so too, Zachor es Hayom Hazeh, Asher Yatzasem in Mitzrayim. You have to remember, tonight is Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's present tense, just like today is Shabbos. This year, of course, we get both Shabbos and Yetzias Mitzrayim at the same time. And that's why we don't say the bracha, She'asa Nisim La'avoseinu, Be'yamim Ha'ein Bazman Hazeh. Why don't we say that? We'd say that for Hanukkah, we say that for Purim, because it's not relevant on Seder night. It's not happening way back. It's happening tonight. It's happening in real time in the present. Right? So there's a mitzvah of Sipur Yisias Mitzrayim. How do we know? Rambam quoted a posik, but there's more than one posik. Let me quickly run you through the four sons. Not the four sons as they appear in the Haggadah, we'll get to them soon, but the four sons as they appear in the Chumash. The idea of four sons is because there are four occasions in the Chumash where the Torah says, tell your children as follows. Number four. Now you have to go through remembering which son is which. Ki yishalcha bincha machar. When in the future your child says to you, Lemon, they say, Ma ha'edus v'hachukim b'hamishpatim asher tziva Hashem Elokeinu etchem. What are all these laws and rules that God is commanding, that the Lord our God is commanding you? Whose question is that? That's the Chacham. That's the Chacham. And everybody knows there's a whole Torah. Why does he say etchem? It sounds like it's just you and not me. Isn't that more along the theme of the Rosha? But we don't get upset with the Chacham. More about that too. Soon. V'amata levincha. And you have to say to your son, Avadim hayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim. We used to be slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. V'yitzein Hashem b'mitzrayim b'yad chazakah. V'yitzein Hashem osoy samosim gedolim v'rayim b'mitzrayim v'faro b'chol v'yso leinenu. V'yisanu hoitzi misham. God took us out of there. L'man havi otanu latet lanu et ha'eretz Hashem nishpal avotenu. V'yitzaveinu Hashem la'asot et kol ha'chukim ha'ele. God says we have to do all these wonderful rules. V'yiras Hashem v'yiras Hashem elokeinu l'toiv lanu, because it's good for us too. Kol hayamim, all of our lives, Yoseinu kayom hazeh. It's going to be great for us if we do this mitzvah. Just like he so told us. Is that the answer we give to the Chacham?
No.
No. Is that the answer we give to any of the sons? No. No. Avadim Hayinu is the way we start the Seder. It's not the answers to any of the sons. The Avadim Hayinu is what we say at the beginning after the Manishtana. We'll get to that soon. So this is a beautiful answer which we don't give to any of the sons. Rav David Zvi Hoffman already 130 years ago asked a lot of questions, and before him, other Meforshim, why are the answers in the Torah not the same as the answers that we give in the Haggadah? I'm not going to go through every one, but that's the first one, number five. Next, V'haya ki yomru aleichem b'nechem, when your children will say to you, Ma ha'avodah hazot lachem. That's the Russia, right? So what's the answer we give in the Torah? V'amartem, and you'll say, Zebach Pesach Hu Lashem. This is a sacrifice for Hashem. Hashem Pasach Habate B'nei Yisrael B'Mitzrayim. But not for Yitzim Mitzrayim, that God passed over our homes when he afflicted the Mitzrayim. That Batenu Hitzel, and he saved our homes. V'yikod Ha'amishtachav, when the people bowed down. Now, is that the answer we give to the Russia? No, also not. Do we give that answer to any son? Also not. By the way, it's interesting, the question of the word Pesach, Rav Rimon spoke about this last Shabbos in the Shabbos HaGadol Rosha, we normally translate the word Pesach as Passover. In fact, Philo translated it as the crossover festival, not passing over. But it's not so straightforward, because the word Lifsach can also mean to go to somewhere specifically rather than to pass over it. It's not just Dilug. And therefore, the Rav Kook understands that Passover, Pesach, is not that God was destroying the homes of the Mitzrayim, but he skipped over the homes of the Jews and missed them out. But there was a destruction of the homes of the Mitzrayim, and God went to each Jewish house to protect them from that destruction. And Pesachim is where God was visiting, like it says in this pasuk, Lehitzil. Okay, what does it say? Yeah, Hitzil. Hitzil, Hitzil. God protected our homes. So maybe Passover is actually the biggest mistranslation in the history of humanity. Certainly the biggest in the history of the Jewish people. It shouldn't be called Passover, because it sounds like God is skipping us. It should be called, I don't know, Visitation, or something like that, where God is coming to our homes to protect us from the destruction. Whatever, that's something to... Yeah, sounds too Catholic. Okay, fine. Okay, so that's the Rosha. Different answer. Number six. V'ayaki yishalcha bincha machar. When your son asks you in the future, Leimon, he says, Mazot. What's the answer? Who asked that? That's the Tam. V'amata elav, b'chozik yakot ziyanu Hashem b'mitzrayim b'beit avadim. And that is the answer we give to the Tam, as we see in a minute. So that's one question. Now seven, finally, without a question, v'higada talavincha b'yom hahu, you will tell your child on that day, leimor, v'avuzeh asa Hashem li, b'seisim b'mitzrayim. That's what God did for me, because of this, pointing to the matzah, etc. God did this for me when I left Egypt. Now, who do we give that answer to on Seder night? The Rosha and? No, the Einu Delishol. Interesting. So the questions of the Chacham and the Rosha get different answers in the Haggadah from in the Chumash. The Tam gets the same answer, and then we use v'higada talavincha for the Rosha and the Einu Delishol. And the Chacham gets a completely different answer that doesn't appear anywhere. Which is, we tell them about the rules of Pesach, Afikoman, etc. More about that soon. But this is all to kind of whet your appetite, to get you back in the mood of Maggid. These are the four psukim of the four sons as they appear for children in the Chumash. Now, go over to page 3. In fact, before you go to page 3, take a look at page 9. I hope you've got your glasses with you. We're not going to be reading all of page 9, don't worry. But page 9 sets out, in appendix 1, on one page, the entirety of Maggid. Okay? It's, as I say, just under 2,000 words. It doesn't look too daunting when you see it all on one page. And what I want to basically show you, just to remind you, and we'll see more about this soon, Maggid basically comes to us in four different sections. First of all, there's an intro, which is Halach Ma'aniyah, which really is nothing to do with Maggid. It's really to do with Yachatz. We just broke the matzah. So we're saying this is the Lach Ma'ani, the Lechem Oni, the bread, negative connotation of the bread of affliction. And then we have Manishtana, just to run through to remind you. We have Manishtana, the four questions. We'll see soon in a minute whether there really are four questions, or there are three, or there are five. We'll get to that soon. And then we have the answer, Avadim Hayinu, where we talk about the fact that we were slaves. There we give the story of the Maaseh of Rabbi Eliezer, Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, etc., when they were all in Bnei Brak with Rabbi Akiva, talking about Sipur Yisis Mitzrayim. Then we have the interlude from Gemara, from the Mishnah Brachas, of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, I never knew you could prove that you have to say Yisis Mitzrayim at night, until I heard Ben Zoma, etc., etc. More about him also soon as well. And then we sing a song, Baruch HaMokam Baruch Hu. Very nice. Then you have the four sons, which we just talked about and we'll get back to. Then you have a new answer, Mitzchila, or first Yachal Merosh Chodesh. We talk about why we do Seder night tonight, not the whole month. Purim, if you remember, is really the whole month of Adar is relevant to Purim, but Seder night is for this night because the mitzvahs are there. Then we give Mitzchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoseinu, which is the story of the move from paganism to monotheism. And then we sing another song, Vehisha Amda. Okay. Then we have Tseolomad, which is all about the Chumash and Lavan, etc. Then we have the long droshes all the way through those four psukim. We'll see, are there four? Are there five? We'll get there soon. Of the psukim of Arami Ovid Avi, which we, at that point, you know, we're getting all excited. We're getting into how many miracles were there. There were 10, there were 50, there were 200, there were 250. We're getting all excited about that. And then eventually we sing another song and we sing Dayenu. Then we have Rabban Gamliel, who says, why do we have these three different mitzvahs, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror? We answer those questions, and then we say, B'chol dor v'dor, chayv adam liroesis atzma ki ilu hu yatzma mitzrayim, that we already got from the Pasuk, it's in the first person, I came out of Egypt. And finally, we break into song again, and we sing Hallel. Zeu, and then at the end, we say a bracha, Gaal Yisrael, and according to the Minhag Ashkenaz, at least, we make another Brekri Hagofen. That's the whole Haggadah. If we could do it that quick, I'll say tonight, that's the whole of Maggid, rather. It's not the whole I got, it's the whole of Maggid, which we managed to do very briefly in about 3 minutes, less. Now, remember that structure. We will come back to that structure soon. Go back to page 3, please. So I brought you the four basic outlines that I just went through now. When do we first see this? Meaning, people were bringing the Korban Pesach for thousands of years. We saw Philo, we saw Josephus. People were doing the ceremony. Did they have a Haggadah at the time of the Korban Pesach? So we'll see a few hints this way and that. The Haggadah that we have today, that I just showed you the Maggid from, is the Babylonian Haggadah that we see for the first time in full, pretty much in full, in the Siddur of Rav Amram Gaon. Rav Amram Gaon lived in he died in 875. He was in Sura, in the Academy of Sura in Babylonia. And it's appended to his Siddur, is the Seder of the Haggadah. Also in Rav Sadja Gaon. Also we see Rav Natronai Gaon. And then we see a few hundred years later, the Rambam includes his own Nusach, which is basically the same one of the Haggadah at the end of Hilchas Tefillah. So we see in the time of the Gaonim that the Haggadah is basically what it is today. At least the Babylonian Haggadah, which became the Ashkenazi, the Sephardi, the Yemenite. Everybody basically uses the same Haggadah, which makes sense because it became established before the Ashkenazim and the Sephardim split in, let's say, the 9th, 10th century. And therefore the Haggadah we have today is the Babylonian Haggadah. There is also, I should point out, another early Haggadah, which is called Haggadat Haggadah Eretz Yisraelit, or Haggadat Eretz Yisrael, which had a slightly different, in some cases significantly different Nusach, which missed out Dayenu, and it didn't have Avadem Hayinu, and the suggestion was that that was an early Eretz Yisrael form of the Haggadah. Rav Natronai Gaon is very unhappy about it. He said it's made by Amoratsim, and maybe even Karaites, etc. We don't use that. You have to start looking in the academic Haggadahs for the Nusach of the Haggadah Eretz Yisraelit. However, it's out there, but it never survived. The Babylonian Haggadah became the one that everybody uses, Sephardi, Ashkenazim, and the Yemenites. And we're going to have a look at that now. Fine. So let's pick some bits of the Haggadah that we all know, or we think we know. Let's start with Manishtana. We've all been saying Manishtana since we were 3 years old, right? So let's have a look at it again. Number 8. Says the Gemara, the Mishnah actually in Pesachim. So Manishtana is taken straight from the Mishnah. When I say that the Haggadah is from the time of Rav Amram Gaon, that's the final format. The actual constituent parts of the Haggadah are much, much older. From the Gemara, from the Mishnah, maybe even from, we'll see, the times of the Temple. But just like the Siddur was coalesced in final form by the Gaonim, so too the Haggadah. Look at number 8. Here's the Mishnah version of the Manishtana.
What page?
Page number 3. Source number 8. Mishnah. You pour a second cup. And here the child asks his father, if the child doesn't have what to say, the father teaches, which probably is not a question. The word ma is usually an exclamation. Ma toivu alecha Yaakov. It's not like a question, why is this night different from all of the nights? That's the second major mistranslation of the night, of the day. It's how different this night is from all other nights. So here are the four differences. Every other night, we eat all kinds of meat, boiled, roasted, etc. Tonight, only roasted meat. As every other night, we dip once, and the Gemara corrects that to be we don't have to dip if we don't want to. Tonight, dafka, we dip twice. Now, you obviously have an immediate question about that, which is the question about the meat. We don't say the question about the meat. So why do they have a question about the meat? So you could answer, that's because it's around the time of the Beis HaMikdash. And they're asking the question, why are we only eating roast meat tonight? And by the way, Rav Chisda in the Gemara, I didn't bring you the source, asks from this question in the Mishnah, whether the Korban Chagiga also had to be eaten roasted, or could it be eaten in a regular... Kormoris was normally eaten however you like them. Sauteed with a little bit of garlic sauce. Whatever you like. Tonight, dafka has to be roasted. So Rav Chisda clearly understood that this was dating from the Mikdash. However, it's not so clear. Because as we'll see in a minute, it could be that they brought Korbanos, specifically Korban Pesach, even after the destruction of the temple. And we'll get to that in a minute. So maybe this line is from the temple times. Maybe it's not. Either way, we got rid of it. Because it's not relevant tonight, today. And dafka, a lot of people have a minhag custom that they do not eat roasted meat. More of that soon. And what did we replace this question with?
Leaning.
Which was not a question then because people leaned. Today it's a question, why are we leaning? People didn't used to have dining room tables and chairs and sit straight. They used to have like a chaise lounge and they used to lie down, you know, people fanning them with like fans or whatever and feeding them grapes. That's whatever. Probably most people didn't, but that's how rich people lived. By the way, all these questions that the son is asking, why do we do this, why do we do that, why do we do this, how does the son know all this?
We teach him
before? We prep him at cheder for 3 weeks before. It sounds from here that the kid is saying, why did we do this, why did we do that?
Because the meal was first.
Oh, so we'll see. It could well be that the meal was at the beginning and the Haggadah was at the end. The Manishtana clearly seems to be, we've just done all this, why did we do all this? So let's tell a story. We'll see that soon. However, the first big surprise of today, I think, will be the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi, which presents the Mishnah, same Mishnah, except different Mishnah, gives only three questions, not four. Number nine. Says the Yerushalmi, this is the version of the Mishnah in the Yerushalmi. Mazgul Kosheni v'kana ben Shoyl, v'im ein das b'ben, l'shoyl l'shol aviv malamdo, manishtan halal ez mikol ha'elos. Fine, so far so good. Shibachol ha'elos anu matbilim pa'am achas halal ha'zeh shtei pa'amim. Well, that was the last question before, and now it's the first. Shibachol ha'elos anu achlim chametzu matzah, every other night we eat chametzu matzah, halal ha'zeh kula matzah. Okay. And shibachol ha'elos achlim basad sili shalug mvushal, halal ha'zeh kula tzali. What's missing?
Maror.
Why is Maro not there? Why is the Nusach of the Mishnah in the Girsa in the Yerushalmi three questions, not four? That's a good question. Maybe there were, it's a question for Seder night, more good questions. Maybe there were originally three questions and they morphed into four, which kind of ruins a lot of Divrei Torah for Seder night about all the fours, yeah? But okay, maybe Maro's included in the dipping question because that's what we were dipping. And therefore, that's part of the same question. But either way, the Yerushalmi has three questions, not four. And then the Haggadah of the Eretz Yisrael Minag that I mentioned stuck with the three questions. But the Babylonian one went with the Babylonian Talmud as we have it and has four questions. But we're only at the beginning. There are other changes in the Gemara, in the Haggadah. And the Haggadah doesn't need to necessarily give every pasuk exactly how it appears in the Chumash. We're not learning Chumash, we're learning Haggadah. For example, look at number 10. Avadim hayinu lefarah b'mitzrayim, v'yotzeinu Hashem Elokeinu misham. This is from the Haggadah. God took us out from there. B'yad chazaka ubizro natuya. But the actual pasuk in Devarim Vav is Avadim hayinu lefarah b'mitzrayim, v'yotzeinu Hashem mi'mitzrayim b'yad chazaka. Now a few changes. It doesn't say Hashem Elokeinu, it says Hashem. It doesn't say misham, it says mi'mitzrayim. and it doesn't have the words of Bezeron Netzuyah, okay, that's not a problem, because the Haggadah doesn't have to give the Pasuk exactly where the Chumash is giving the Pasuk. It's paraphrasing, it's telling the story. Although, you might be interested that the version of the Haggadah, of the Pasuk, is actually that of the Septuagint, of the Targum Shivim, who has these words in that the Haggadah puts in, which is, okay, so were they just paraphrasing, or were they using a version of the Pasuk from the Septuagint, which has Zeror Netzuyah in it? Okay, that's an interesting question, but it's not a big question. Yes? Oh, did I? I usually avoid that.
On number 10.
On number 10? Where did I write Hashem? No, one second. Okay, Elokeinu, okay, fine. I never write Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. Yud-Yud is not Yud-Kei Vav-Kei.
No, if you look at the appendix, you do.
Was
in the appendix.
Oh, the appendix I did? Oh, good. Oh, I'm glad you're reading carefully. That's excellent. That's excellent. Okay, so I normally avoid Shem Hashem so that people... I hope people don't throw them on the floor anyway. But now you know. So you have to keep this whether you like it or not. Or you have to put it into Shemus. The four sons. Let's go on. Let's go into the four sons. Before we get to the four sons, we talked a little bit about Avadim Hayinu. It appears, as we said, in the Maggid, although it is a slightly different version than we have in the Chumash, which is fine. The account of the rabbis in Bnei Brak does not appear anywhere else but in the Haggadah, and there's a lot of Torah on Bnei Brak, and why these rabbis, and why are they in Bnei Brak, and I'm sure you've heard lots of lovely ideas on this. These rabbis are pretty much the same group that appears at the end of Makkos, when they're looking down on the place of the destruction of the temple, and they all start crying, and Rabbi Akiva starts laughing. It's a famous story, and they ask, why are you crying? Why are you laughing? Well, why are you crying? And Rabbi Akiva is the one who's able to turn destruction into hope for the future, and here they are in Bnei Brak, which is Rabbi Akiva's town, in the middle of the Hadrianic persecutions, possibly hiding away. This is a meeting, a cabinet meeting of the leading rabbis of the generation. Obviously, if the Romans knew, they would raid it, and therefore they're there with Rabbi Akiva to discuss policy in the war against the Romans, and also to discuss Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that's one of the reasons they're with Rabbi Akiva, because he can give them hope, etc. Then the Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is from the Mishnah in Brochas, as I mentioned. Baruch HaMakom is not specifically in the Chumash, although Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu is a form that we see the Chazal use. But let's look at the four sons. Where are the four sons from? The four sons we saw are rooted in the Psukim. But the Brisa of the four sons. So let's have a look now. This appears in the Yerushalmi. Number 12. Says the Gemara in Yerushalmi. Tani Rebbe Chiya. Okay, Rebbe Chiya is an Amora in Eretz Yisrael, first generation of Amorim. Keneged arba banim dibra Torah. Ben Chacham, Ben Rosha, Ben Tipesh, Uben She'enu Yodei Lishol. So the first change is, the Tipesh became a Tam. Why did the Tipesh become a Tam? So, to some people, political correctness maybe a little bit. People don't like talking about the Tipesh, the foolish son, the idiotic son, etc. It's not, doesn't go with it so well with everybody's saying. So one of the suggestions is maybe the Tam is a much more positive expression, etc. But there's something for you to think about. Ben Chachamahu Omer, Maha Eidos Va'achupim U'mishpatim Asher Tziva Hashem Elokeinu Otanu. Now that should raise an eyebrow, if an eyebrow was ever raised. Because that's not what the Chumash says. The Chumash says Etchem. And all that Torah on, you know, why is the Chacham excluding himself like the Rosh, but we don't criticize him. According to the Haggadah, the Yerushalmi, it says Asher Tziva Hashem Elokeinu Otanu. Now, is that a problem? No, it's not a problem. There is a version of the Septuagint that has Otanu in it, rather than Etchem. And if you're into Latin translations, the Vulgate uses that. But pretty much every manuscript and every Torah and every, they all say Etchem, which is what we have in our Torah, which is what we have in our Haggadah. So Rav Menachem Kasha, in his Haggadah, which has a lot of interesting academic comparison as well, he suggests the following interesting history of this word. The Torah says Etchem. Everybody knows that. However, the original Haggadah changed it to Otanu, because why not? The Haggadah can paraphrase. The Haggadah is not writing a Sefer Torah. It's giving a story in order to avoid the question on the Chacham that everybody then asks, which is, why are you excluding yourself? So the Haggadah changes it to Otanu. And many early Haggadahs that we have, manuscripts from the Gniz, etc., and the Rambam's earliest manuscript of this, says Otanu. But then later Haggadahs got very worried by this and says, oy vey, there's a mistake here. It's not what it says in the Pasuk. And they changed it back to Etchem. which is what they wanted to avoid in the first place. But I just wanted to point that out, which is interesting. It says here, Otano, Ah, HaGadol says Etchem, etc. And then he goes to the rest of them, the Tipesh, and the She'ein Lo Lishol, etc., etc. So that's, I brought a few other changes here as well, as to the differences between the Haggadah and the version of Yerushalmi, but that's basically where it comes from. The biggest, by far the biggest section of the Maggid is the Drasha, Aramid, Arami Oved Avi, which of course is taken from the Psukim of Bikurim. Very important point as well. When the farmer, hundreds of years after Yitzis Mitzrayim, brings his first fruit to the temple, these are the four psukim that the farmer says over to the priest. I got a story to tell you. It says Vehigadata there as well. That you will say, you will recite that. There's a link there textually. And he gives his psukim. We went down to Egypt and we were afflicted and God took us out. Now, first of all, these are very appropriate because they're in the first person. This farmer is using exactly the right nuance, because the Pasuk says, and the farmer is also saying in the first person, which is why it's better to choose these psukim, and the Haggadah does that, than to choose psukim from Shemot, which are historical much more. But there's a fifth Pasuk. The fifth Pasuk, which is, and God has brought us to the land of Israel, which we don't say in the Haggadah. Rav David Zvi Hoffman suggests that in the time of the Mikdash, this was part of the Haggadah, that they did recite a Haggadah in the Mikdash, and they included the fifth Pasuk as well, because they were in Israel. But when the Haggadah was later written in Babylon, they took out the fifth Pasuk, just like the fifth cup. There's a fifth cup. Do we say the fifth? Do we have the fifth cup? Do we not have the fifth cup? So here's a possible fifth Pasuk that in the end we don't have, and certainly the Haggadah we have today only has four Pesukim.
Reason to put it back in.
Oh, so then Rav Menachem Kasha and others, if you're very into the Tzionut and making that part, they put the fifth cup back in. Do they put the fifth Pasuk back in? Interesting, they do that as well?
Okay.
You can start a new minhag, whatever. Look, there's no problem of hefsek. You can interrupt in the Haggadah with anything to do with Mitzrayim, so it's not like laning the Megillah. We have a rule, by the way, at our Seder, that we have three rules. Number one, if you have a Dvar Torah to say during Maggid, it has to be about Yitzis Mitzrayim. I don't want to hear gematrias of everything that don't even work, etc., etc. Has to be relevant. Number two, if your Dvar Torah is less than 2 minutes, we'd love to hear it. If it's more than 2 minutes, we'd love to hear it during the meal. Thank you very much. And number three, we caffeinate our guests significantly during Maggid with coffee and with Coke, etc., etc., which some people say, well, you're not allowed to drink during Maggid. It's also poshut. Really, the Mishnah Berurah says you are allowed to drink as long as you don't drink wine. We don't drink wine, but certainly coffee and caffeine help a lot. Okay, fine. So the four sons, Yerushalmi, certainly, maybe even in the time of the Mikdash, we used to say that too. The point that I made before of the meal, it's interesting that the son, as I said, was asking about things that apparently happened already. And the first person to really explicitly flag this is the Mordechai. The Mordechai, living one of the Balei HaTosfos in the 13th century, he has a very serious problem. Why don't we have Lechem Mishnah at the Seder? Why do we have a broken piece of matzah? You need to have Lechem Mishnah. It's a very strict din. And it's a Yontif meal. Why don't you have Lechem Mishnah? So look what he says, number 13. It says in the Mishnah, they brought him matzah. He says it sounds like one matzah. Mashma delekaki im matzah achat, shleima. They brought him one matzah. What are you going to do with one matzah on Yontif? The afal gav, the bashar yamim tovim bein lechem Mishnah, shalem, even though we normally need two loaves. So they brought him one. Because makam shani hacham. Maybe it's different on this night. Diksiv lechem oini. Poor man's bread, poor people don't eat whole loaves, they eat halves. And that's a very famous pshat of the Bahag, that tonight's an exception. You don't need Lechem Mishnah. The second loaf can be broken because it says Lechem Oni. Shepirish da afa gav de bein and Lechem Mishnah. Normally we need two loaves. Mikomachem asya Lechem Oni v'garil Lechem Mishnah v'okmi apaga. But the Lechem Oni requirement cuts one of the loaves in half. Okay? The Loi Nira, I don't like it. I don't like that answer. Why would Yontif be any lower? You shouldn't need less. So with Pesach, you may want to have an extra half, but you shouldn't take away from your two loaves. And he comes up with the Ashkenazi minhag. Three matzahs. Because the brisha is a boitzin achas perusha in size. You break the middle matzah, that can be your lechem oni. And leave half of the afikoman. The chatzi ha'cheret manich bein shtei el shleimus, and you put the remaining half between the two whole matzahs. U'mavarich birchas ha'motzi ala shleima, and you make birchas ha'motzi on the full matzahs. Va'ala chilas matzah ala prusa v'chein nadal. And that's what we do, and that is actually what we Ashkenazim do. We go over the pain, but you still got a problem. So he says you need three matzahs. So why in the seders it say you brought the shamash brought a matzah? From back then, and don't ask me a question that it says one matzah in the Mishnah. It's only one matzah. This was in those days. He says explicitly that they used to do the seder after the meal. So I only need one matzah. Why? Because it's a ceremonial matzah to do the seder on. We already made a motzi on two matzahs. We already had dinner. We already had our knedlach. We already sang our songs. But now we're bringing out one matzah because now we're going to have the seder. And this is the ceremonial matzah. We'll break it in half and we'll do the whole Haggadah. But we already have our meal behind us and we're happy. And that makes a lot of sense if you think about it, because they were under time pressure for the Korban Pesach. Now, people still are under time pressure because they want to eat the Afikoman by Chatzos like the Korban Pesach. But then they were under real time pressure that they had to get the Korban Pesach done. And therefore, it could be that this was the way around. So a lot of academics also take this understanding. But you see it in Mefurash, you see explicitly here in the Mordechai, that's why they brought one matzah. It was a ceremonial matzah. They broke it in half. The eating, we already did. And then we'll nibble this at the end. And we will also bench on all of it. Okay, fine. Now, whether you had to have another kazayas of this matzah, that's an interesting question. Which is the main mitzvah of matzah? Is it the first one you eat? Is it the last one you eat? Not getting into that now, halacha shit. Okay, couple of things, and then we'll get to the last point that I mentioned at the beginning from Rav Rimon. I brought you a whole bunch of sources here about the Chorban. I'm not going to go through them now. It could well be that there were sacrifices brought even after the time of the Chorban. One of the minhagim that if you bring look at number 15 for a second on page 5, Amar Rabbi Tzadik Masiv Rabbi Gamliel. There was a story of Rabbi Gamliel. Sha'amar leTevi Avdo. He said to his slave Tevi, Tseud slay lanu et haPesach ala askala. Go and make us a korban Pesach on an askala. Now, first of all, an askala is made of metal, and you're not meant to make a korban Pesach on an askala. But second of all, why on earth is Rabbi Gamliel making a korban Pesach? This is Rabbi Gamliel in Yavna, who lived after the time of the destruction of the temple. And I brought you in number 16, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says it's absolutely clear from here that Rabbi Gamliel, even in Yavna, was able to go to Yerushalayim after the Chorban and bring Korban Pesach. Very interesting. And there are other suggestions as well. There was a minhag they had to make a gedima kulas. Gedima kulas was a roasted lamb. And the question is, are you allowed to do that on Seder night? This was not the Korban, this was Zecher Lemikdash. And Rabbi Gamliel used to do this maybe as well or instead. I'm not getting into that now. And the Chachamim said, no, you can't, because it looks like you're bringing a Korban Pesach after the Korban, which maybe he was anyway. But either he was bringing a Korban Pesach or he was doing something Zecher LePesach, but we stopped. The Chachamim said, no, you're not allowed to do that. You only have only had boiled meat on Seder night. Roasted meat is too much like a Korban Pesach. But I brought you in number 19 as well. This Todosh Ish Romi. Look at number 19. Todosh Ish Romi Hinek Es Bnei Romi. There used to be a minhag in Rome. La'achilan Gedim Mekulasim. They ate one of these roasted lambs. Belele Psachim. This is in Rome. This is in Rome. When in Rome, huh? Okay. Shalach le Shimon ben Shetach. This is the couple of generations before the Chorban. Shimon ben Shetach in Israel sent him a letter. Il male tadus ata. This was the way he spoke. He spoke about this to Choni Amagel as well. If you weren't tadus, gozrani alecha nidui, I put you in cherem. She'ata machel es Yisrael, kodshim b'chutz. You're making people think that they can eat korbanos in Rome and they can't. Clearly tadus Israel, he was a big time of Chacham. He said, I can't put you in Chayim because of who you are, but how can you do this? So you see from here that even during the time of the Mikdash, there were people eating not korbanos, but quasi korbanos, zeicher le korbanos. Well, we're in Rome, but we're not in Israel. A lot of interesting things going on. Was that all part of the experience? Exactly. Yes.
When did they switch from having the Haggadah after the meal to before the meal?
Good question. I'm not 100% sure. Certainly, by the time of the Haggadah in Babel, it was the way we have it today. It sounds from the time of the Mikdash. During the time of the Mikdash, they had it that way around because they had the time pressure for the Korban Pesach. But by the time we have our Haggadah, it's back the way we have it now. Okay, but that's an interesting question. Let me point out another couple of interesting things and show you what you've got on your sheet. There's reading for Seder night and for the rest of Pesach here. If you look for a second in page number 10, look at appendix 2 in page 10. Appendix 2 in page 10 is a comparison between the Mishnah in Pesachim and the Tosefta in Pesachim. Now, what's the Tosefta? The Tosefta is normally understood to be a collection of Braitot. The Gemara says, Rashi explains that Rabbi Oshaya and Rabbi Chia put together the Tosefta in the generation after the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda ben Hanasi made the final edited cut of the Mishnah, and the brises that were left out, the Tanaitic material, were gathered together by the Tosefta, and then by other halachic midrash, and then by the Gemara. So the Tosefta is often a kind of commentary, in some ways, on the Mishnah. It's a little bit after the Mishnah. However, that doesn't mean that all the material in the Tosefta post-dates the material in the Mishnah. The collection postdates, but the material doesn't. And therefore, I brought you, and you look at this carefully later, the Mishnah in Pesachim, which basically is our Seder the way we know it today, is a little bit different from the Tosefta. There are parts which are very similar. It starts with the same ideas about leaning, about having four cups, etc. It talks about Kiddush, and there's a machlokes beis Shama beis Hillel in how you make Kiddush. That already dates from the time of the Mikdash. And then you see in Mishnah Dalad, look on page 10, in the Mishnah column, you've got all of our Maggid. All of the Maggid. Mosi Lo Kosheni, Kana Ben Shoyel, and you have the whole story of Maggid. And this kind of connects with Miriam's question a little bit, which is, in the Tosefta, we don't have Maggid there. There is no Maggid in that way in the Tosefta. It just skips the whole thing, goes on to Hallel, go over the page to page 11. You end up with a parallel machlokas about Hallel. And then in the Tosefta, all the discussion about Korban Pesach happens at the end of the night. Look here in number 11 on the left-hand column where it says Tosefta, halacha yud bet, ma'aseh b'ramah gamliel v'zakenim shehayu mesumim mebeis baitzis, ben zunim, belud, v'haya oiskim behilchas Pesach kol ha'layla, ad karois hagev, until the cock crowed in the morning, he gbiwu menifneyem, he got up from them, from with them, v'noide v'halacha, v'halchu lahem lebeis ha'medrash. They all went to the Beis HaMedrash. So could this be, there's a suggestion that Tosefta maybe reflects of earlier time when they were still doing the meal followed by the Haggadah, or maybe an early version of the Haggadah that we have today, which the Mishnah then said, no, the Haggadah that we're having is this way around, etc. But you should look, for example, there are a few hints. I'll give you another one. In the Mishnah, when it talks about the Korban Pesach, it says, Ubemikdash hayu mevi'in lefanav gufo shel Pesach. Which is very clearly after the Mikdash, right? In the Mikdash, they used to bring them the Korban Pesach. Whereas the parallel line in the Tosefta is B'mikdash meviim lefanav gufa shapecha. In the Mikdash, they bring, not hayu meviim. Okay, you can't read too much into that maybe, but there are little hints. And again, there's a vast amount of academic material on comparing and contrasting and trying to work this out. Was it already a little bit during the Mikdash? Was it just after the Mikdash? Etc. And there are hints all over the place as to how that works. Now, I want to give you a last thing before we finish. What is this symposium I mentioned? What is a symposium? So the symposium was a Greek custom. A Hellenistic custom where the wise learned men of the community would gather together to eat and to drink and to discuss learned matters. And the whole thing descended into a bit of a riot because too much drink and too much messing around. But it was a kind of a soiree, I suppose you'd call it, to discuss learned issues. And the question is, when Chazal, after the Mikdash, wanted to say, okay, we need to put together our response to the symposium. We don't do the symposium where the whole thing, you know, descends into anarchy. But we do what the most fancy people do. The whole point of the Seder is to be B'nai Chayrim. We lean, we drink four glasses of wine. So if the height of Greek intellectual interaction is this symposium, let's put together, maybe, the suggestion that the Seder is now structured around this, but with a very Jewish tint to it. Have a look, for example, in the last appendix. I brought you an appendix 3. I brought you some comparisons here between the Seder and the symposium. For example, in the Seder, the Tosefta says the servant dips the entrails. I don't suppose you do this at your Seder, but maybe something to introduce. So too, that's one of the things they used to do. The idea of leaning is common to both. Drinking cups of wine. We drink 4 cups. Back in the standard symposium was they drank 3 cups of wine. Pouring water over the hands of the guests. Washing was something they did in the symposium. Their idiom was even to take water. Netilat Yadayim, which is very interesting. Take the water on the hands. They used to bring lettuce, which is one of the things that obviously we do on Seder. They used to sandwich the lettuce. That's one of the minhagim they had. Here's an interesting one. Afikoma. What's afikoma? Now, you and I call the matzah afikoma. But that's not what the Mishnah uses afikoma. The Mishnah says, we may not have an afikoman after the Korban Pesach. So in Greece, they had this thing called an epikomon, when at the climax of the symposium, they'd all barge out of the door and crash the symposium down the road in drunken revelry and move the party down the road. And therefore, it could be the Mishnah saying, you're not doing that. You're staying in the room, you've got the Korban Pesach there, or you're staying together. This is not going to end the way the Greeks ended. The epikoman is not what you're going to have at the end of your Seder. Questions as well. There were all sorts of interesting questions at the symposium, gathered, learned gatherings, stories about them learning all night and going to the Lyceum in the morning when they needed to teach. I brought you all the comparisons, you can look at them yourself. Again, we're not suggesting that the Seder is based on the symposium. We're suggesting, maybe, that when Chazal wanted to create more of a structure after the Mikdash, because there's no Korban Pesach, the obvious structure is the learned symposium structure, which we need to give a Jewish angle to, and make sure that we're drinking wine Hashem Shemaim, we're discussing Torah Hashem Shemaim, we're not just crashing the neighbor's party in a drunken riot. Okay, fine. In the last 5 minutes, let me refer you to Rav Rimon's important ideas, that the Mishnah itself stresses 3 or 4 things. First of all, it stresses there have to be questions and answers. Absolutely key. Shoyel, a ben shoyel avid, as opposed to every other night of the year when you can just state Yitzias Mitzrayim without questions and answers. Tonight, you have to actually ask questions and answers. Look in number 23. We'll just finish with this in a few minutes. Says the Mishnah, Mazgul Koshani, Mekana ben Shoel, etc. And he says, Lefi Data Shoel ben Aviv Malamdo, page 7, number 23. Matchil Begnusu Masayim B'Shavach. You start with the bad news and you end with the good news. That's an instruction in the Mishnah. And the Gemara debates, what's the bad news and what's the good news? So have a look here in number 24. Says the Gemara, so your child should ask, your spouse should ask, v'imlav hu shoyel atzma, you should ask if you need to. Afilu shnei tamei dechachom sheyodim hilchas pesach shoyelin ze laze. Now, matchil b'nusu masayim b'shvach. You start with the bad news, then with the good news. My gnus, what is the bad news, good news story? Rav Amar, Rav says, mitchila ovdi avodah zara hayu avoseinu. The bad news is we used to be pagans. That's terrible. And the good news is, now we're in Avodas Hashem. We have a more sophisticated Avodas Hashem as monotheists. Shmuel Amar, no. Shmuel says, Avadim Hayimi. The bad news is we used to be slaves. The good news is we used to be free. Clearly Rav focuses on the spiritual journey, and Shmuel focuses on the physical journey. Rabbeinu Chananel in North Africa, Paskins, what do we do today? 25. Matchil Gunus, Mahi, I'm a Rava. He says it as Rava as opposed to Rav here, but it's a later generation. Mitzchila Obdi Avod Zara Hai of Eseinu, Rav Yosef Amar Avadim Hayinu Leparo, the Ha'edna, and today in our Seder, Avdinun Shravayu, we do both. We do both. We do Rav, and we do Shmuel. Now, what Rav Rimon suggests is a beautiful idea, which he bases it on other studies before, is that the Haggadah we have today is actually 4 Haggadot, all put together, all with the same structure. You can see here the Gemara is already putting structure, the structure that coalesced by the time of the Gaonim. But Rav has one emphasis. My story is more the spiritual story. Shmuel says, no, I think you should focus on the physical story. And in fact, what we do is all four Haggadahs. What are the four Haggadahs? So when you go home, you can put this back into Appendix 1 and look at the structure. But I want to show this to you now. It's a very beautiful idea. Basically, the way it works is as follows. The first Haggadah we read, each Haggadah has the same structure. Question, answer, we break into spontaneous praise. Halel v'hoida. So the first thing we do is we have the Haggadah Shmuel. Shmuel's Haggadah is the Haggadah of slavery to freedom. We ask questions. Manishtana halala hazeni kol alelot. And these are very physical questions. Why do we dip this? Why do we eat that? Why do we? And what's the answer? Avadim hayinu. That's what we say is an answer. We used to be slaves. We have now physical freedom. And we break into song. What's the song? A little song. Baruch hamakom baruch hu. We intuit this. We sing Baruch HaMakom, right? Baruch HaMakom, whatever you sing. Okay? That's the end of Shmuel's structured Haggadah. Question Manishtana, answer Avadim Hayinu, song Baruch HaMakom. Then we do Rav. New question. Arba Banim, can I get Arba Banim Dibra Torah? Chachum Mahu Omer, Rasha Mahu Omer, Tam Mahu Omer. These are different kinds of questions. These are more cerebral questions. What do the mitzvahs mean to you? Why do you keep mitzvahs? Why are you religious? What does this mean to me? Not physical questions. And then we give Rav's answer. At the beginning we used to be pagans, and now we have Avodas Hashem, and we break into song. But the song's already a little bit, it's a crescendo. The song is V'hisha Amda. It's not just Baruch HaMakom. V'hisha Amda is like, you can do the old-fashioned V'hisha Amda, you can do that. Or you can do the Yonatan Razel, so you can do whatever you like. But V'hisha Amda is like, and that's Rav's Haggadah. Then we go on to the Haggadah. The Mishnah says you have to be Doiresh, these Psukim. You have to go through the Psukim. Seulumad, let's go and learn. Ma bikesh Lavan, what did Lavan want to do to Yaakov Avinu? And then we go through the whole answer, which is we went down to Egypt and we came out of Egypt and Lavan was responsible because he switched Rachel for Leah for Rachel, rather, etc. And then after like a whole page of darshaning, we need a bigger song now. And then we break into spontaneous praise, which is Dayenu. By now we're really dancing, the wine's kicking in, and we're gazing. And then we get to Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel in the Mishnah already says, you have to tell the story through the mitzvahs. Pesach, matzah, maror, why do we eat these? This is new questions, new answers, and then we break into Hallel. And the reason that you have these different Haggadahs all put together in our Haggadah, which coalesced over time, is because different children need different answers. Different kids connect with different things. Different people connect with different things. Some people want to hear the story of slavery to freedom. They want to talk about human trafficking and how we have to stop it and how slavery is a terrible scourge and it's still and that's one story. Some people want to talk about Frumkeit and what does religion do and how do I connect through Torah, etc. Some people just want to sit and learn. Let's learn Chumash, Seol Umad, and the story is told through the Psukim. And some people like touchy-feely. I need to chew something to get my head around this. I need to taste something. Okay? There's the Haggadah of the mitzvahs. Doesn't matter what you like, there's something for everybody. There's the physical, there's the spiritual, there's the Torah learning, there's the mitzvahs. And that's the genius of the Haggadah that puts it all together. Now we do all of those Haggadahs. So hopefully what you got out of today is that the Haggadah has very deep roots. Not only is it found in the time of the Gaonim, but its roots go back to the Gemara, go back to the Mishnah, maybe even to the Mikdash. Maybe it looked a little bit different. If you'd have gone to Hillel and Shammai's Seder, okay, in Hillel you'd have eaten a sandwich, we know that, but it would have maybe looked a little bit different, the Haggadah, but the mitzvah, the Galat HaLebimcha, has been reverberating through the Jewish people for 3,000 years, and Be'ezrat Hashem for many generations to come. I wish you all a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. Read the sheet, and you'll hopefully get more from it.